enter into a situation to be involved in marriage, and certainly to be involved in the raising of children, and how we need God's help, and how the very goal of our life is the goal of God's, is what He would want us to give those back to God, everyone back to God. And the idea is that we want to develop the character of God in the life of our children. We want them to be conformed to His image. And so knowing who God is, establishing that in the home, in our own heart, having the humility to seek His ways is that which is absolutely crucial. Another thing that we pointed out and we're talking about in the raising of children is how do they develop heroes? Who are the people that you want to follow? Who are the ones that would be that your child would look up to? And we talked about opening the home and having Christians in the home, and we talked about many other things relating to relationships. As I've said all along in dealing with the raising of children, relationships are the key element that I've seen. If they can establish relationship with the right kind of people, then our children generally will be blessed. And so we summarized last week of how we want to be sure we establish the character of God in our lives, in the lives of our children. One of the worst things we can do is to be, how can I say it? We could attend every service but have a hard heart. We could, you know, have a doctrinal acceptable position, but then have an arrogant attitude toward people. And we could be like the Pharisees, who appeared to be in a good place. They talked about the Word of God. But in John 5:42, Jesus says, "But I know you, that you do not have the love of God in you. I have come in my Father's name, and you don't receive me. If another comes in his own name, him you'll receive. How can you believe who receive honor from one another and do not seek the honor that comes from the only God?" And so developing a heart of seeking God, of seeking His praise, of having a genuine faith, that is powerful. As I mentioned in my own life, my mother had many weaknesses, many doctrinal weaknesses. There was a lot of things that she didn't know, and there were weaknesses she had. But one of the things my brother and I saw very clearly is that she believed in God. And even though we ended up going astray from that path for a while, that character, that attitude had an impact on us to today that my brother and I are both Christians. So now, let's talk about marriage. Marriage is a relationship. It is a relationship that should be reflective of heaven. And if our relationship reflects the character of God, then we're going to have a good marriage. But Ephesians 5, and let's read this, and we'll have some of you do some reading as well. Ephesians 5, 25 through 27. As you begin to see the relationship of husbands to wives, and then later wives to husbands, notice the standard. Notice how the character of God is at the foundation of this. Who would like to read this morning? Okay, Susan?
"Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she would be holy and blameless."
And what you find here in the husband's relationship to the wife is like Christ's relationship to the church. And so we're talking about the character of God. Let's talk about our relationship to Christ. How does Christ think of us? How does Christ handle us? What's Christ's goal with each of us? When we become a Christian, is there some work to do? There is. And how does Christ lead us? He always puts our needs first, what our real needs are. Now, keep in mind, what our real needs are, not what our wants are, but what our real needs are. And we'll find here an understanding, a sacrificial love. Now, how far would Christ go to provide for our needs? He would die on the cross. That He gave Himself for her. And so, As I mentioned earlier, when you talk about a child coming into the world, husbands, your child's first concept of who God is going to be you. And that's very humbling. And here we find that the attitude of the husband toward the wife ought to be reflective of the character of God. Of course, that's totally humbling, and it's like, wow. But see, that's how we learn. But we have to want to pursue God's character and God's nature because of His love. It will affect every relationship you have, and it will bless you. And so again, knowing who God is, understanding His character. And so we go back to a whole series we've done, and we've got the outlines in the back for those who are visiting if you wanted to get the whole series. We've studied a lot of things. Holiness. And what about holiness? What we find out about holiness? Holiness is what God is. Holiness is God's ways. Whatever God chooses, that's holy. And holiness is something we don't innately know. And so here is God's ways that is holy. And we have to say, Lord, tell me what holy is. And whatever He reveals, that's what we do. And so you'll end up with a home very much directed toward God's Word, won't you? Very much directed toward hearing God. How about the jealousy of God? Should we have godly jealousy in our lives? Absolutely. Sometimes, let's find some, you know, zealous love is another way of describing godly jealousy. Jealousy and zealousness, this is a review of our studies. That's the same word. And so you can use zealous or jealous. So what are some things we might say? Let's say a child's going off to college. Have you ever said this? Remember where you come from? Remember the family name? Remember who you are? That's an idea of the idea of a zealousness of the path and the love. I care about you. This path is the right path. How about anger? Should our children ever see us angry? They better. Does God have a wrath? Is there a time for godly wrath? Yes. So oftentimes our problem is we go beyond that. And so I will tell you, there are some things. I remember my dad. Son, you respect those in authority. You respect the policeman. You respect your teacher. And, you know, I got to see it kindly spoke to me. And I've seen my dad angry with people who did not show that. And so your anger teaches some things. It does. I can remember Bill Hall talking about his dad and some lessons. And he was, you know, at a filling station. His dad saw something. And he saw his dad's anger at what he saw. You see, anger teaches, doesn't it? If you're totally indifferent, if you say you get angry about nothing, something's wrong with you. And then long-suffering. And obviously, well, I don't think we need to comment much on that when we deal with relationships. See, that has to be developed in our character. And so, again, Jesus. Mark 10:45, who'd like to read that? What was the character of Jesus like? Mark 10:45. Stan, you want to do that?
For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give His life a ransom for many.
Now, in being a servant, does that mean you're just passive and wait till somebody tell you you want to do something? It might mean that in some circumstances, but the idea of serving is active and even taking stances that maybe no one understands. I mean, we understand that as parents. As parents, we understand. You get it. If you've been a parent, you understand the battlefield. There are a lot of things you do, not because it's pleasant, but you want to provide for your child. See, that's what God was like with us in the sending of Jesus. Matthew 20:27, whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give His life a ransom for many. Let's talk about the home. The home is a place to serve others. Is that easy? It depends. It's not easy. You have to put aside your own desires. But when you do that and you see the fruits of your labor, it's worth it. Let's look at Proverbs 31, the virtuous woman described here. Proverbs 31, 10 through 12. Who would like to read? Who would like to read? Proverbs 31. Okay, Connie.
Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life.
You know, that's the idea of becoming a Christian. What's the first step in becoming a Christian? What's the essence of becoming a Christian? What word would we use? Someone believes or is a believer. What's another word for believe? Trust. Well, how do you know you can trust God, by the way? You need to know God. Here's the idea. The character of God is trustworthy. God always does what is best for me. He never lies. He's always there for my best interest and will tell me inconvenient truths that I need to know, but I may not want to hear. You see, that's a powerful thing, and trust is a rare thing today. One of the greatest consequences in our culture of the breakdown of the home, the government funded of the breakdown of the home. And I won't get into politics, but it's tragic of how things have been produced and with intent, in my view. But if you don't have trust, what kind of relationship you got with somebody if you can't trust them? I've heard of employers say, well, you know, here's some employee. He decided he was going to lie to somebody else to give me gain. And you know what an employer would know? If you're going to lie for me, you'll also lie to me. Trust, very crucial. And in the home, trust is crucial. And that character of God. You see how the character of God. Marrying a Christian. Having a Christian by your side. Worldliness cannot work in the home. Marriage is for three. God is a witness of the marriage. And so, if you end up having friendships with the world and you don't have connection with Christians, I'll say this when I'm dealing with the students, you know, when I was at Auburn, if you start seeing somebody's regular associations are all with non-Christians, that's a big red flag. That's a danger. Having your home to be used for God's glory. I realize different parts of the country, things are different. How you do this, how you work this. I know that back in the place that I, and we talked about this last week, but I'll mention it again. Martin talked about it. You know, man, when you can have Christians in and out of your home a lot, when you can do things and see your children, children can see things like that of the Christians being in and out of the home, being around parents who have children the age of your children, making it a place for singings and Bible study and so on, all of those things are very, very powerful. 1 Corinthians 7, 3-5, if we could. Here is a passage in 3-4. Here's a passage that deals with meeting the sexual needs in the home, but there's a concept here that goes beyond this. But the idea is, you know, as a husband, you know, I want to lead. And if things are not right in the home, that ought to bother me. And I ought to look at, first thing, what can I do? And oftentimes with the husband, I won't get into the details of marriage, we don't listen, and therefore we think we know what to do, and we don't know what to do because we're not listening. But let's read 1 Corinthians 7, 3 and 4. Who would like to read that? Okay, Chris.
Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but his wife does.
But notice in verse 3, to give his wife the affection due her. And so, as the husband, if I perceive things are not going right in the home, I need to ask. I need to look at my service. I need to look first off, am I listening? Because that's our bigger problem as men. We don't understand women. And women oftentimes don't understand men. But one of the things is that I need to talk. I need to ask. And so that is a very powerful thing, as we're just simply saying, I am to be a servant. And there are things my wife needs I don't understand. But I say don't understand, let me put it this way, I would not innately know it by my own male perspective. But when I understand it from a female perspective, it's neat. I'm very delighted to give it. And so again, but I'm glad we're different, you know. It's like she needs order. I don't necessarily need order. I'd be messy, you know, as an example. But there are other examples. That's not just a male thing. That's more of a personality thing there. But you see, fulfillment. What makes you fulfilled? Being able to serve. Being able to give. Being able to provide for that which is going to last. Sometimes we've all probably had a bad relationship if you were in the dating realm and something like that, where you trusted somebody and they disappointed you, and we've seen disappointing things. But it's a beautiful thing to know what you are doing will make a difference in eternity. And that's real fulfillment in life. Is you go back. How many of you have had very difficult times in the raising of your children? How many of you have had crisis, health problems, financial issues? And you go back and you look at that time. I know when you're going through it, sometimes you're thinking, well, you know, I sure don't want to be here. I'd like to be out of it. But there's something about looking back and know that you've served and know that it has cost you. There's something about the inward fulfillment of this. Philippians 2:17. Here's Paul talking about his service to Christians. Who would like to read that? Philippians 2:17. Okay.
But even if I am being poured out as a drink of bearing upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I rejoice and share my joy with you all.
See, if we're in a marriage relationship, we should be thinking about, am I serving? Am I providing for the real needs? Am I there? Am I connected? And you see, there's something about being poured out as a drink offering. Let me ask you about drink offerings. Drink offerings may have some precious liquid, maybe that would have been a wonderful thing to drink, or maybe have some value. And what do you do with a drink offering? You pour it out on the ground. Now, that's really satisfying to you, right? I'll never forget, I'm going to give an old David Hartzell illustration. David and I, a friend of mine, he's passed away about this time last year, I believe. And we ran together. We trained for marathons together. And we were supposed to get up early on an August morning, you know, a hot August morning in Alabama. We were to get up early and run, and we would end up staying up too late, and we got up later than we needed to do a, let's say, 15-mile training run. It got hot. And David would put Gatorade bottles out with ice in it at a certain part on the course where we had to have the water. Now, back in those days, I used to talk about age, they made Gatorade bottles out of glass. And I'll never forget this. I'm sitting there almost hallucinating. I mean, I was pitiful. When am I going to get there? I'd be complaining. I said, that's me. If I get you know, I was just the old complaining, fussy guy. And there up ahead is where the water bottles were. And I remember getting close to it. Some high school kid saw those bottles off on the side of the road and took his car and drove it over them. And the only thing that we saw was broken glass and water in the ground, you know. I would have lapped it up if I could have lapped it up. But so when you pour out your drink on the ground, it's gone. Okay, that was my illustration. And imagine you and your service are giving your life. it's worth it. You're going to give your life something. Let's do it for the purposes of God. And it's not just your children here. Who's Paul doing? Who's Paul serving here? Other Christians. See, that's meaning. And notice, did he say, "Oh, I'm so sorry I did this"? Is that what Paul said at the end of this verse? "This is a terrible thing. I hope you don't have to go through it. I'm glad and rejoice." That's what Jesus did. Why? In Hebrews 12, I don't have this in the passage, but why did Jesus in Hebrews 12 endure the cross, endure the contradictions and the slander? It says, "For the joy that was set before Him." And you see, if that's our attitude in the home, I'm going to be a leader and I'm going to lead in sacrifice. I'm going to lead in listening. I'm going to lead in providing God's things for my children. It may mean standing up in my wife and my family. It may be standing up and rebuking. But I am going to serve. And so there's our problem today. The biggest problem we've got in the marriage relationship is that we're thinking about ourselves. And we're thinking about me. And again, if you see the nature of God, why did Jesus do what He did? 2 Corinthians 8:9, you know these verses. "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though He was rich, yet for your sakes He became poor, that you through His poverty might become rich." One of the worst things He can do as a husband is to say, "I'm just going to do things I like to do, and I'll provide for you, and y'all just go ahead and do your best you can." Now, I'm glad you provide. We have a generation now that they don't even provide. But you see, providing for the home is far more than money. And it's far more than, "I'll take care of everything I like, and in my extra time, if I've got something left over, I'll give my family the leftovers." No. That's not how it works. Luke 9:23, you know this verse. And He said to them all, "If anyone desires to come after Me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow Me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for My sake will save it." It's a joy to die. It's a joy to be crucified. It's a joy to give yourself for something unselfishly. And the reason why you do it, you know God. If you don't know God, I don't know how you're going to do it, okay? If you know God, see, God's character is going to lead us different than the ruler of this world does. It's the spirit, not the flesh, that we're following in this. And so, how many illustrations can we give? My parents had many weaknesses. But one of the things I know about both of them, and they wanted to provide for my brother and I what we needed. I always found it interesting with my dad. My dad wanted to get involved with us as boys and find things we liked to have me sports. And I always think, when I think of football and I think of coaching, I think of my dad. He was in World War II, and he was in an elite unit, and they trained others to take the beach on Normandy. That was one of the things that he did in England. And he loved to coach, and he was a foreman in management and business. And, you know, my dad definitely took time with both of myself and my brother. We normally did sports together. We did other things. We did fishing. But we had time together, and I look back now, I see what he was doing. And I've got some old video of him, and I just remember being in the car. We would talk about some things, but he'd always have lessons for me. He'd always talk about things. And you see, that's the nature of good parenting. And I did have Hebrews 2. Okay, let's go ahead and read Hebrews 2. I quoted that, so I went ahead and jumped in. I couldn't remember if I had an outline or not. Let's do Hebrews 2, 2, 2, 4, if we could. Who'd like to read Hebrews 2, 2 through 4? Okay, Joe.
"Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider Him who endured such hostility from sinners against Himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your soul. You not yet resisted the bloodshed, striving against sin.
Okay. I've already mentioned to you, referred to Hebrews 12:2. It was the joy set before him that he did what he did. So now, let's have some discussion. Okay, I know I've kind of lectured here a little bit. In the church, amongst Christians, how can I put this? Trying to phrase it in a way where I just don't preach it and we get a discussion on this. Do we have a problem with the role of men? Let's talk about the culture first, and we'll talk about the church. Have we seen a shift in our culture toward what a man should be and how a man should act? How do you see that? I'm going to let y'all be on Zoom here. Let's talk about that. How should a what's the culture doing to us right now? Yes.
Demasculating the men.
Yes. Define that. Demasculating the men. What are men designed to do? What did Ephesians 5 say that men ought to be?
Well, they're to lead.
To lead.
To lead, yeah.
Absolutely. Men are to be the ones who stand up, the ones who fight if needed, the ones who in a critical situation will stand in the gap and fight for their home and fight for what is right. And there is no question that in the last 30 years there has been a consistent, directed approach toward the tearing down of men. I've got a whole quarter that I do on this subject, a whole quarter, called Building a Godly Man. And so I won't go deeply into that. But we've got to separate our children, particularly our young boys, from so much that's going on in our culture, from commercials to the entertainment, because men are generally presented as idiots. And somehow women have superhuman strength, and you're seeing that now where men are almost generally pictured as idiots and women are heroes. You're seeing that psychological effect. I mean, there's a lot of counselors and others that are in the world say, this is devastating what's going on right now. But now, how that affects the church? We need more men in the church. And when I talk about men, I'm talking about men of courage. Men that be willing to step up when it's difficult and when they may have everybody against them, and they're going to go, this is right, or this is not going to pass. You've seen that when you have men knocked down, what will happen? This is setting things up for totalitarianism. Again, you may say it's a conspiracy theory, but if you have the breakdown of the home and weak men, then you can have a dominance in evil places. Evil will not be resisted. But it's a problem in the church. You oftentimes see situations where you have men there, but they're cowed down and they're afraid to say anything. And you're seeing today in the world, a lot of people are saying if they had a choice, they'd rather have a girl than a boy. The prejudice toward men has been so extreme. But we can build godly men. And it goes back to in looking at Jesus as our example, looking at the Bible. You see how the Bible pictures men in their role, okay? And so this brainwashing, this stuff, it's coming at so many levels. And you've got to be very careful about public school now, unfortunately. You've got to be very careful about the messages that are being sent. We can overcome that. A good, strong home can overcome all of that. But again, observations. I'm doing all the talking. Y'all have any observations along these lines?
Well, Larry, I think one thing that you can to observe some of what you've mentioned is can't be denied when you just look at the evidence of it in the digression, or we view it as digression. presented in media, even in, I mean, in sales catalogs from 40 years ago.
Yes.
The men selling shirts and pants and products versus the kind of men that you see the imagery of that is promoting those goods. In commercials and in marketing, it's pretty clear that this metrosexual kind of male is favored, right? Where the lines are blurred between what is male and what is female, and it's put, and there's value placed upon that, and that is a very early step toward what we're now having to see and endure of a confusion of gender. But before you can confuse gender, you have to confuse what is a woman and what is a man.
Yes. Yes.
That gender.
Yes.
Right. And there's real issues with that, and that's what you're, I think, what we're pointing out here. For me, my difficulty with looking at scripture is to find the distinguishing verses that are talking about what men should be versus what husbands should be.
Yes.
And I think there is a role here and a confusion that we allow to enter the discussion to where the issue of single maleness and single femaleness is a different situation, and there's different guidelines for that.
Correct.
Versus husband and wives.
Yes.
And so young men are look at this and this lack of teaching and this void of this is the way you're to be whether you're single or married.
Yes.
This is the way you're to be as a husband.
Yes.
And I would say the same thing for young ladies. They bristle at the application of husband verses to them when it really doesn't apply to that situation.
Correct.
It applies to the husband.
That's right.
Wife situation.
That's right.
And we have to be very, talk about, you know, handling the Word of God accurately.
Yes.
And carefully. We do ourselves disservice when we aren't very careful in this area, because the world will jump all over that and paint us in extremes when we err.
Excellent. Excellent observation. One of the things that, you know, again, we talk about this topic is to understand that men have a role, they have a place. They are not inherently evil. They reflect the image of God, the character of God. And it's interesting, a couple more verses here. You know, men in the marriage relationship, they are to take the lead. They are to be the ones that are to raise their children, to train their children in the training and admonition of the Lord. And so, again, I realize that the wife in the home has powerful influence on the teaching and has probably far more time, you know, at certain phases of the children's life to teach the child. But the father still is the one who is the head of this, and there's to be involved. Know what's going on. We're going back to talking about communication and not being isolated. And of course, in the home, we need women to take the approach of what they should as well. Looks like I have a little bit of a problem in my PowerPoint and my outline here. And so here we go. I don't know why those slides came up. They're not in the outline. So give me a second and we'll go here. Okay. Hebrews 12, 6 and 7. We talk about the home now. If we reflect the character of God, there are times for correction. There are times to stand and discipline. Discipline is not fun. But notice here what God does with us. Hebrews 12 and verse 6, for whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons, for what son is there whom a father does not chasten? Have you known of situations where the father is basically AWOL? And all of the correction, all of the instruction is done by the wife. That's not good. I realize my mother, and I'm so thankful, in the time I lived, you know what? You're talking about showing your age. In the time I lived, all the mothers stayed in the home, at least in my neighborhood. Somebody working outside the home was almost unheard of. Of course, you hardly didn't hear of divorce either. Divorce was unheard of. Back when in the 60s, when I was being raised, in the neighborhood I was in. And I'm not saying a woman cannot work outside the home. Her primary role is in the home. But the idea is, you know, my dad, you know, my mother disciplined us, did things. I'll have to tell you, as a boy, I liked it when my mother disciplined me, because I knew it wasn't going to hurt very much. She'd go get the switch, and, you know, I tried to kind of act like it hurt, you know. And so my brother and I, we were okay with that. But then if it wasn't doing the job it did, then I'm going to have your dad take care of you. Now, that was nuclear weapon there. Okay, and what, first off, I had to wait till my dad came home, which was bad. And then my dad had a process where he had me go into the restroom and wait on him before he came in, and the waiting was terrible. And but, you know, I loved my dad, and, you know, that discipline didn't have to occur very much. And so my mother and dad worked together. My mother was there bulk of the time because of necessity. But we work together. And so that's the thing I would say. The thing, you know, one of the problems we've got in the church, we're talking about the church now, about men, we don't have many men. Sometimes when a problem occurs, everybody goes, runs, and hides. Somebody's abusing, hurting another person, out of line, and everybody wants to sit on their hands and their eyes bug out, and they don't want to say anything, do anything. Oftentimes it's the local preacher that ends up having to go and face something where no one else will face it. I'm not saying we fly off the handle. I'm not saying we try to get in and try to rule in places we don't have we're not an elder or so. I'm not talking about, but I'm talking about being men, of saying, hey, this is not right. Hey, let's work this out where you go to the problem and don't run from the problem. There is the problem, both in the home and in our culture. And so God likened himself, not only, you know, we talk about him, you know, husbands imitating Jesus. God also likened himself as a mother with children. Here's the verse I want to talk about. Deuteronomy 6. I want to look at a couple of things here in Deuteronomy 6. Let's just go ahead. Let's go 4 through 6 first. We're familiar with that verse. So let's do Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 6. Who would like to read for us this morning? Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 6. Okay.
Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart.
Okay. We'll stop there for a second. Just keep that open. I'm going to have you read the next section in just a moment. But notice, we're familiar with this verse, right? Wow. Jesus quoted this verse. Love the Lord your God with how much of your heart?
All of it.
All. How much of your soul? All your strength. And so we're saying there is the kind of commitment to serve God, right? You ready? Ready? So you give everything. You don't sacrifice anything for that. Now look at the next two verses. Deuteronomy 6, 7 through 9, since you have that, continue reading. Now, it's fascinating. Look at this context. Here we quote that first part, and it's good to quote it. But notice just right in. Okay, you're committing everything. And so now with all this commitment, teach your children with that commitment. Hardest thing we'll ever face is teaching children. And it's humbling, and we'll mess up, and we'll always, none of us look back, oh, where do we go? But here we're talking about the character of God affecting our homes. how do you go about, I know this is so broad you may not even know where to start, but using this context, how do you go about fulfilling this verse that we just read and teaching children? What are some things in the verse we just read? What teaching from your parents do you remember the most? What was the setting and the circumstances? What do you remember the most? Yes. It's your whole life. I heard that right, didn't I? Yeah, I'm terrible at my hearing. It's your whole life. And so sometimes we think, I've got to teach my children, so I'm going to set a time. At this time of the day, I'm going to have a Bible class with my children. It's good to do that. And those are wonderful times. But I tell you, one of the things I'm so thankful for here, I was in Charlottesville, and I had a chance when we had another full-time preacher in to actually teach a class, and we had one class, it was just my daughter Emily and I. I'm really glad we had that time. It was good to have a regular class with her. And I was thankful for that. But, you know, we had all kinds of other times. Talk. As we lived. As we go. You know, I think, if my daughter got to be a teenager, you know, going somewhere with dad, oh, okay, I'm going to hear a bunch of things, you know, and so on. But, you see, that's it. You see, it's like, sports brings great opportunities to teach lessons. Other things, disappointments. The greatest lessons my children could possibly learn is when they were hurting. And I'd love to be there, and I want them to talk to me. And by the way, even as they grow up and have their own children, I hope you could always talk to your children. Keep in touch with them. Any other observations on that? Yes.
You know, looking at this 8 and 9 about writing it on the doorpost. You know,
yes.
I don't think we need to just rush past that. There are so many things you see today used in the decoration of people's homes and things. And it seems almost petty, but I think there's a real strength to having the Word of God in front of you in places where you normally are every day.
Yes.
I think of my grandmother's house down in Hopewell.
Uh-huh.
They finally moved out of that home after 4 generations when my daddy was grown. Everything was divvied up. I got one thing from that house, and it's one of my most cherished things I got, was this little figurine that went above the door post within the house. She had it strategically placed and said, God bless this house. And it was hanging from a nail. It had just one little hook per nail to be in it. And it was made of plastic. But my entire life growing up as a little boy going to my grandpa and grandma's house,
uh-huh.
I always saw that anytime I went in and out of the kitchen. God bless this house. And so for me, that item represented my entire family on that side of my dad's family. Because, you know, when I see that, I think of the influence of my grandmother, my father, my uncles, my aunts, my cousins, and everyone associated. And those are godly influences.
Yes.
And that's the impact that it had on a little bitty boy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We have when we were raising our kids and they were very little, Jilly bought a plain table. She's a little artistic. And she painted on the top of it, cast your bread upon the waters, and it shall return unto you in many days. First